We're running a little bit late here. Let's get started. I believe we have a resolution today, and Representative Pearson, would you like to read the resolution?
I appreciate the honor, or I would consider it an honor. Thank you very much. This is a House resolution honoring Dan Hoffman of Rochester for his contributions to agriculture. Whereas Dan Hoffman grew up on a diversified livestock and crop farm in southeast Minnesota and learned the value of hard work and rural living, as well as cooperatively working together in a farm partnership. And whereas Dan earned a Master's of Agriculture Education degree from the University of Minnesota in 1983 and has spent his entire professional career working in agriculture. And whereas among his many achievements, he received the Minnesota FFA Foundation Media Award for Outstanding Promotion of FFA and Agricultural Education in 2014, the Minnesota Farm Bureau Agriculture Communicator of the Year in 2012, and the Southeast Minnesota Ag Alliance Ag Advocate of the Year in 2010, and the Minnesota Outstanding Young Ag Teacher of the Year in 1986. And whereas he also received a Personal Achievement Award from the University of Minnesota Waseca as a Mork Educators Award and Outstanding Young Educator Award nominee, and had a featured interview in a Specimen magazine in January of 2015. And I wish you wouldn't have done so much. This would be a shorter proclamation. And whereas he is the current host of the popular PBS television program Farm Connections, where he has helped tell the story of agriculture for 8 seasons, and whereas he has been the executive director of the Minnesota Agriculture and Rural Leadership Program for the past 3 years, and whereas over the years he has made thousands of on-farm consultations and worked with up to 3 generations of family members in one farm operation, and whereas he has the background, knowledge base, and passion to help farm families reach their goals, now therefore be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it congratulates Dan Hoffman of Rochester for his contributions to agriculture and wishes him continued success in his future endeavors. This is dated April 7th, 2015. It's signed by Speaker of the House Kurt Dowd, Chair of the Rules and Legislative Administration, Joyce Pepin. It's signed also by your representative, Kim Norton, and State Representative Kim Norton. I think I said that right. And myself, and I'll have our chair sign it as the final state rep to sign it. And congratulations, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you. Very nice. That was, like you said, there's so many achievements here. It's hard to get them all on the paper. So, very nice.
Thank you.
All right, members, did we approve the minutes, Madam Vice Chair?
We did not. So,
Representative Johnson, did you take a look at the minutes?
A quorum
is present, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes.
All right. Any discussion? We have the minutes before us. Any discussion on the minutes? So all those in favor of minutes dated April 7th, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, the first bill on the agenda, we'll do House File 1337, a Keel bill. Vice Chair Keel, if you'd make your way up front, please. And Representative Keel, she'll move House File 1337 to get it before us. And Representative Keel, this will be held over for possible inclusion, is that correct, in the Omnibus Finance Bill, Ag Finance?
I would appreciate that.
All right. So, Representative Keel, to your bill.
Well, thank you, members. AURI has been in existence for more than 25 years, and I remember when it was started. There are 3 sites in Minnesota. One is in my hometown of Crookston, also in Waseca, and then also in Marshall. I also have the privilege of serving on that board at this time, and am learning even more about what AURI is doing, and would like to see us fund. The request is for $1.1 million in the first year, and then $1.2 60 in the second year for the appropriation. AURI is an opportunity for us to connect not just agriculture or expand agriculture, but to connect business with agriculture. And I am hearing exciting news about we're even becoming larger than our borders in Minnesota. The things that AURI does building ag bioscience. I'll get it out eventually. All those little words we put together. But also looking at providing critical engineering services, helping with new dairy beverages, expanding existing projects and initiative capacity, building entrepreneurial capacity with ethnic minority populations, and then there is a little bit of cost in there for administration, which in the overall budget is pretty minor. I have had the opportunity to visit both Crookston and Waseca and have seen some of the exciting things that they're working on. And if you have the opportunity to go visit those places, I encourage you to stop by and see what they're doing. It is really good to see them connecting the ag possibilities with the job possibilities and increasing the economics. But with me is former Representative Dan Scogan, who would like to also talk about AURI, you would oblige me.
Well, thank you, and I believe you just got a promotion to representative. From Senate to representative, that's a step up, as we all know.
Mr. Chair,
please state your name and who you represent for the record and begin, please.
And I won't comment on that comment, Mr. Chair, because
not if you want your
bill to pass.
I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing.
I appreciate that.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Keel, thanks for bringing House File 1337 before us today. AURI is all about opportunities for the state of Minnesota. It's about opportunities for Minnesota's agriculture. It's about opportunities for entrepreneurs and small business people. And as you know, AURI, as Representative Keel pointed out, was created some 25 years ago, a little over 25 years ago now, when agriculture was in a dilemma, low commodity prices, we were looking for added value to ag products. Now, I have stopped by, I believe, most of your offices with the bill that you're seeing today because I wanted you to have a clear understanding that we have kind of reached capacity with our base funding, and we're asking for this one-time money to move forward with some new projects. We did not develop this project list in a vacuum. We do it strategically. We look for opportunities because we are judged, by our outcomes. Because 70% of our funding comes from the state legislature, we are constantly scrutinized as to whether or not we are achieving the outcomes that are written into statute and how we go about that. So we do forums with Research and Promotion Councils. We meet with commodity groups. We have stakeholder analysis. We have industry analysts that we get together with. And at the end of the day, our senior directors have three or four or five, or this particular year, we had six items that percolated to the top that we need some additional funding to address. The top three were the engineering piece, the entrepreneurial capacity and the ethnic minority piece, and the work with the dairy industry piece. We just have not had the capacity to work in those three areas as much as we should. The engineering piece has become critical. We were hearing it from our clients and our industry supporters for a long time that they thought that some of our entrepreneurs and small business people were not making good decisions when they got to that point where they could scale up. And we did not have an engineering service that they could go to, and they did not have the capital to go and hire one to give them good advice. So this engineering piece, our project managers and our clients are all looking for that so that they do it right when they get the opportunity to scale up. The ethnic population piece is something we've heard in this committee on a regular basis now. Farming is changing in some areas of Minnesota, and we see a lot of Latino, Hmong groups that farm very small acreages, maybe not even an acre, but they are entrepreneurial and they are innovative. And we just have not had the capacity to reach out to them and help them, bring them along, other than they know that they can raise their crops and sell it at farmers markets or to family and friends. But we think there's an opportunity to include their innovative spirit in creating new products for agriculture for Minnesota. And then the third of the six that really rises to the top is the dairy piece. There is some work being done currently about creating an aseptic dairy processing plant, and some of this money, I think it's about $200,000 that the our senior directors would like to ensure some of our dairy clients would have an opportunity to get involved in that. And I don't wear a white coat for AURI, but I know from what I understand, the dairy products have the ability to be heated for a few seconds to a few degrees, and then you don't have to refrigerate it to store it. And that could have worldwide impact on preserving dairy products for others. Hmm. And we want to make sure that we're have the capacity to be at the table. The other three are certainly did not rise to the three of those first three that I mentioned, but we do have some IT issues. We'd like to stay as modern as we can to help our clients. A lot of the entrepreneurs are very IT savvy, and we want to keep pace with them so that we communicate with them in the way that they're comfortable with. There's some lab upgrades that are going to be upgrades that are going to be required eventually, and then of course we, as most of you have heard over the last 2 years, we have been involved in the ag bioscience strategy done by Battelle, and there's going to be some collaboration and some movement on that, we hope, and that would take some money to push that along as well. Right. That, in a nutshell, is what this money would be used for.
So, Senator, can you share with us a little bit about the board structure, changes within the board structure, some of the things, you know, in recent history, some of the things that have been done there, if you will, please?
The board structure really hasn't changed, Mr. Chair and members, because that is set in statute, and that would require a statutory change as well. But the board is nine deep. It has two members from the legislature, one from the House, one from the Senate. It has two from agribusiness. It has three from the commodity groups, and it has two that represent statewide farm organizations.
And Senator, how are those, has there been new members, or how is that determined? Who appoints them, if you would, please?
Mr. Chair and members, about a year and a half ago, the board passed a term limit policy with internally, and so now they are on a nine-year rotation, and before that, members served pretty much at their at the will of the people that they were serving for. Although they did always have to be approved by our board, I don't believe anyone was ever not approved when they came to our board. So we are in a term limit situation now. So that has changed. And then in the last 2 years, two board members have also changed. We've got one new one in the Ag Finance Division, and we have a new representative with Farmers Union.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Scogin. Could you maybe tell us how the $1 million statutory appropriation that the Senate provided in perpetuity, how that plays into the funding and this request?
Senator, well, Scogin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I guess I would look at them as separate. We were in 2002 at about $4.2 million a year in baseline appropriation. That had been whittled away over time. We went through some deficit years, and everybody got a haircut at one point or another, and that was an attempt to start to bring us back to where we were. We're still at about $3.6 million a year now, so we're still a little under our 2002 level. And we've just, we took that million and put it into our policies and projects that we had ongoing, and this particular request is to take us to that next step, especially with the three that I mentioned had come to the surface.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Scogin. You know, later this week, the Audit Selection Topic Selection Committee is meeting, and AUR is one of the proposals to have a third party look at the finances and the structure and those things. Is the board supportive of that type of third party review?
Mr. Scogan.
I would have to say, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, that they are. We do an annual audit internally anyway, and we have been audited by the Legislative Audit Commission last year on our finances, and this is going to be more of a process or policy audit. And we have, in our last two audits, have had no recommendations come forward. It is good for us as an organization, we're not a state agency, but we are a state organization, to have people look at what we're doing and how we're doing it, because we believe that we can always do it better, and it's good to have a third party take a look at that and make recommendations. So although we have about 160, 170 projects ongoing at any time with a wide variety of different entrepreneurs and small businesses, that doesn't mean that we're doing it as right as we could. And I think I have a board member sitting next to me. We could certainly ask her as well, but I think when I hear the board, I think they welcome a third party to look at us occasionally and help us.
Thank you. Representative Hansen?
Representative Keel?
Yes.
On that issue?
Yes, I would certainly welcome a review of AURI, and I think it would reveal some welcomed and interesting view of what is really happening in AURI and how it is providing for Minnesota an opportunity for jobs and increase in ag products, new ideas too, you know, just that type of thing. So,
thank you, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I would just remind the committee, if they haven't filled out their their forms yet, you have that, and they, you know, I can take those or they can be submitted.
I'm sorry, Representative Hansen, I missed the joke or something.
I said, just wanted to remind the committee members that they could fill out their forms for the topic selection. We're happy to take those during the week.
So. They're due on Friday, right?
All right. Any other questions from members? Any other questions? I have one. Please, Senator Scogan, just explain to us, how is this research that AURI does, how is this different, say, from research at the University of Minnesota or other places as it pertains to agriculture?
Mr. Chair and members, sometimes we collaborate with the University of Minnesota on research, but much of what the university would do would be production ag research, and you have an important bill that leans in that direction. We don't deal with production agriculture at all. We strictly take what the producer makes and add value to it. So we're not interested in more bushels per acre or more weight on a hog or a cow, but once the farmer has done his job, we want to take that product and add value to it.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions, members? Would anybody in the audience like to testify for or against this bill? Any closing comments? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, of course. Come on down. Sorry. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
Representative Hamilton. Dan Hoffman. I'm now with New Vision Consulting, a company that I use to help farmers, businesses in transition and succession, and conflict resolution. So I've been very busy.
Very nice. Welcome.
I didn't plan on testifying, but when I saw Dan, when I received the resolution, the award, recognition, and thank you, I'm humbled. It's great to serve in agriculture, but it pales in comparison to some of the sacrifices the people in front of me do. Kim Norton, I've watched her walk in our cul-de-sac on the hottest days, trying to represent the area, so thank you for what you do. I met Dan when I was executive director of MARL, Minnesota Ag Rural Leadership, at Big Iron in Fargo. Mm-hmm. So we began to talk some, and I've watched AURI since probably back in early days of when they started, and I tend to agree with them. When I taught farm management, and I taught high school ag in Montgomery, we had a time period where corn was selling for $1 a bushel. And then you take out drying costs, it doesn't pay the bills. And, of course, that was in the 80s. And just like in farm management, if we don't reinvest in instructors, if we don't reinvest in education and opportunities when times are relatively good, we're not going to have the tools in the machine shed when we need them. And that's happening in farm business management right now, and it could happen with AURI. And I had an office in Marshall at Southwest Minnesota State University during that time, so I got to know Krista Nath, who works in meat science. Think about some of the, we're lucky enough to have Hormel still in Minnesota. How many people have we lost jobs? Look at South St. Paul. This organization takes concepts, turns them into products. That's jobs, that's tax revenue. I look at it as a real investment in our future. When I was in Marl, we put on a bioscience conference. We think that's possibly the next wave after ethanol. You know, what's the next thing? With PBS, Farm Connections, I went to Emmitsburg, Iowa, I think it was. We looked at the Poet plant where they're actually taking biomaterial or corn stalks and corn cobs and turning it into ethanol. We really need to reinvest in taking the products we have. Don't take it for granted. If we don't feed this thing, it goes away. And again, I didn't plan on testifying. I just met Dan here. I would support at least doing what you can to reinvest in Minnesota's agriculture. And I concur that the research is not the same. When you take a look at their lab, some of the things they do, I would encourage you to take a tour. There's how many sites? Waseca, Marshall, and Crookston? Mm-hmm. Each region's a little different in what they do. Some are reusing co-products or feedstuffs and making good things happen from that. Some of the research is on manure. Mm-hmm. Making good things happen with that is pretty special. They're also looking at lubricants and meat science. Take a look at their facilities. They can always use upgrading. So I would really appreciate you taking a hard look at it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers, members? Any questions? No? Once again, congratulations, and thank you for everything that you've done for agriculture. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
All right. So, Vice Chair Keel, any closing comments?
Well, I do have to say maybe I should take him with me because he supported both my farm business management bill and my AURI bill. So yeah. My automatic testifier, if you don't mind. No.
Perfect.
Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just really think this is a good investment for Minnesota and really can advance agriculture in a different way than we do in the other bills that we have discussed, and is an important part of our agriculture in Minnesota. And just reminding everybody that, remember, our budget is, what, 0.2%
yes.
of the overall budget. So we don't spend a whole lot of money on agriculture. And I believe, Mr. Chair, we are the second largest industry in Minnesota.
You cannot say that enough, Vice Chair Keel.
So, and I'm, you know, not saying that because I'm a farmer or anything. But I really appreciate everyone listening. I would hope you would include this. And I just need to renew my motion for House File 1337 to be included in, laid on the table for impossible inclusion.
All right. House File 1337 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agriculture Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative. Next on the agenda, Representative Clark. So, as Representative Clark, for everybody, we've been working extremely hard on this, and we want to do what's right. We want to find a workable solution. Representative Clark, for those in attendance here today, Representative Clark has worked tirelessly. I mean, it was just always really trying to find common ground. So if you haven't already, make sure that you've thanked her for all her work on this as well. Representative Clark, I know we have some testifiers, but do you think, how would you like to proceed? Would you like to hear from the testifiers first? Should we put this bill in the shape that we've been talking about and then explain it along the way and then have the testifiers? I guess it's up to you.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, we do have some testifiers here, and we have one young man who's out of school today so that he can come and testify. He's got quite a good story to tell. So I'm thinking, you know, we could definitely hear from the folks that are here. Some of the members of this committee have heard this bill before on the policy committee. I think some have not. So maybe it would be helpful to our following discussion on the amendments, why the amendments are here. I could give a little introduction to those amendments. But I, if we could just, again, maybe have the background, why are we here in the first place? Because it's a pretty exciting opportunity for the communities that are involved.
Yes.
There's somebody from Rochester here, too, so it's quite interesting to hear.
Well, excellent. So let's do that. Let's call up the testifiers then in any order that you would like, Representative Clark.
And let me just preview this by saying the bill that I'm going to ask Mr. McDonald, who help inspire this bill to the Council on Black Minnesotans to start us out. Let me just say,
Clark is they're coming forward. I'm sorry, we'll just move the bill to get it before us. Representative Clark moves House File 153.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me just give back to you. It's been such a pleasure to work with you on this bill. You've been just, you know, amazing inspiration as well as your commitment to make sure we get something that's workable. I really appreciate that. And I know we're in a process. So the bill that's before you, I do want to just say by background to folks, there was a bill that we had extensive testimony on, and the chairman and representatives from the Department of Agriculture and I sat down just a few days before the break, I guess it was the last day before the spring break, and he suggested an amendment that he's going to be proposing, and then we had some discussion out in the community, and there will be some amendments to that. They'll be coming back. So there's a series of four amendments, but what I want you to know is that, as you're going to hear beginning right now, the issue of urban agriculture has been developing, it's been blossoming, and the language in this bill, this will be the first time that the Minnesota has the words urban agriculture on the statutes, and we owe that in part to the incredible beginning work that my next witness is going to talk about. Mr. McDonald, why don't you introduce yourself?
Please introduce yourself and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Edward McDonald. I am the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Welcome.
Members and Mr. Chairman, we are here in support of House File 153 and the amendments. Mr. Chairman, as you stated earlier, this has been a journey. You, Representative Poppy, and Alex did not tell me that this journey and process is kind of like football, that it's a contact sport. I haven't gotten a concussion yet, but
it's coming.
So I'm still moving forward. We've heed your advice to never give up. And I think if, you know, outside of celebrating the passage of this bill, that message has resonated through and through in our community, that it really doesn't matter if there's something that you really feel strong about and is important and improves the community's quality of life, you should never give up. And thank you very much for sharing it and inspiring us with that saying. Mr. Chairman, with the passage of this bill, we are making Minnesota first again, like we are in many things, and that is in urban agriculture. I believe, Mr. Chair, and we continue to do the research around this, is that we will become the first state to really name urban agriculture in state legislation. In addition to that, Mr. Chair, that important notation is that we're improving fresh food access for urban communities. We are improving the ecological system in urban communities around the state. And, Mr. Chair, this bill supports an incredible number of dedicated, passionate urban farmers, non-traditional farmers, but traditional in a sense, and that they, in some ways, are reemerging after a hiatus for many of them in our community from the agriculture field in the complex domain of urban communities, and out of necessity and in many cases, and is fueling interest in careers in the agriculture field to fill voids that may exist in the near future in some of our rural communities. And we're excited about it. These urban farmers will bring new approaches and innovation to producing food, and I'm excited that the state is on record or will be after passage of this legislature in supporting that innovation and creativity that is emerging within our communities. Mr. Chairman and committee members, that conclude my comments. I want to thank you all, and especially you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Poppy, for helping us with navigating. It's not so complex anymore, but it was a couple months ago process here to get to this point. And I also like to thank you and the committee for the great work that you do on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. McDonald. Any questions for the testifier members? Any questions? It's been a joy working with you as well, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Representative Clark.
Michael Cheney, and then after Michael Cheney, Annalee, and Adel.
Another familiar face. I think you've been here before, so you know the routine. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Michael Cheney. I am the founder and executive director of an organization called Project Sweetie Pie. And Sweetie Pie was born out of the threatened closing of North High in North Minneapolis. We emerged in response, trying to devise a new vision for its curriculum and curriculum reform. And so myself and some other folks who were environmentalists, if you will, we rushed forward to try to propose agriculture, food science, and horticulture. And so I tell people I'm not an urban farmer. I'm a freedom fighter. I'm a egg patriot. Because what I see that, you know, in recent years there's been this upswing and tick in terms of a merger. And we use the adage, planting the seeds of change. And that we, number one, wanted to get North High involved in agriculture and seeing it as a course of action, a field of study, and a pathway for career development. And so we enthusiastically move forward. But we were inspired and motivated by some other precedents. And one of that pieces of precedents that I want to bring to the attention of this esteemed group came out of the General Assembly of the UN. 5 years ago, U.S. Representative Keith Ellison came before the community, and he brought some folks from the UN that were working on some mandates. It was called the Five Rome Principles for Food Security. So when we talk about urban farming, I think that that's only looking at it in a very narrow, myopic viewpoint. What we're really talking about is global food security. And in that November 2009, by the World Summit on Food Security in Rome, they talked about three basic principles that I'd like to share with you. A, invest in country-owned plans aimed at channeling resources to well-designed and results-based programming and partnership. B, foster strategic coordination at national, regional, and global levels to improve governance, promote better allocation of resources, avoid duplication of efforts, and identify response gaps. And C, strive for a comprehensive twin-track approach to food security. In other words, they were working on trying, they felt that food security, hunger, was one of the most devastating things that was narrowing the scope of growth, of human growth. And so after hearing that presentation by Representative Ellison and the lady from the UN, it really informed the work that I did, because I felt, okay, I'm a grassroots guy from North Minneapolis. What can I do to support this mandate and this initiative? Last year, there was, there's been a recent merger between health and agriculture in terms of growing the gap that is between them. And so the Minnesota Food Charter, I don't know if many of you are aware of that, but just like Mr. McDonald talked about his listening sessions, the Department of Public Health sponsored all last year a number of listening sessions in what they called the Minnesota Food Charter. It was put on by, sponsored by the Minnesota Department of Health, again, around this topic of food security, food sovereignty. And they talked about agricultural and strategies around agricultural and and food research technologies and practices. And again, I'll narrow it down for folk. It says increase investments in systems for season extension, season moderation, food preservation, systems and technology, including financing and grants for growers. So this effort that we've been embarked on, Karen, much of her work on the south side of Minneapolis, and the work that, you know, myself and Catherine Fleming and a number of other people here from the north side, has really been informed by these two pieces of policy, and we feel that we are on the ground, on the grassroots, really trying to do that work. And so we urge you to join us in this struggle to try to guarantee not just urban farming, but food security for all people and increasing the quality of life for all people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. Any questions for the testifier? Any questions? Mr. Cheney, I remember a while back I was at the University of Minnesota speaking to some students, and I believe you were there with some students as well. Do you recall that?
Yes,
and,
sir. What? Pleased to see you there.
Yes, it was great. Can you just share with us what was taking place that day, please?
Well, again, I'm over 60, so my memory oftentimes fades in and out, but I remember the big vague points. It was through the University of Minnesota. They have an organization over there that's for Institute on Ag and Youth Development.
Yeah.
And again, in trying to really reach out and network to any and all organizations, my students and I, we were working with a fellow by the name of Clement Dapney at the university, which we forged a lot of strong partnerships with them. And so we were there planting seedlings in at the University of Minnesota. And so we adjoined LaJoy Spears and the folks that were part of that institute to really try to let them. The last time at the Ag Policy meeting, I brought with us one of the young people who 4 years ago had no awareness of agriculture, got involved with Project Sweetie Pie, and now she submitted her application to the university and wants to study horticulture. So the proof is in the pudding, that if we inform our young people. Someone told me that urban youth didn't want to work in the business of agriculture and get in the dirt. And my response to was, even if that's true, that's not an indictment of our young people. It's an indictment of us as elders, because we haven't created those pathways to success for those young people. So, again, thank you for reminding of that. It's again, we've got 4 or 5 partnerships with the University of Minnesota. We're working on acquiring a greenhouse in North Minneapolis so that we can work year-round in improving agriculture in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Well, I kind of did, and your memory's pretty good, because that's the way I recalled it as well, and I met some wonderful, wonderful students there, and it was really exciting to see their enthusiasm. So thank you. Thank you for all that you do. Appreciate it.
I'm really glad that we widened the scope of this so that it's not just Minneapolis and St. Paul as the amendments, but again, I think that food sovereignty, food security is if it's a worldwide issue, then certainly it ought to be an issue that we here in Minnesota ought to take heed of.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. Representative Clark.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Annalie Lindbergh. And Beta, why don't you come on down, too? We're just talking about young people. We have one here today who's going to share with us his experience and thoughts.
Wonderful. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Sure. Hello. My name is Annalie Livingston Anderson. I have been working for the last couple of years at the 24th Street Community Urban Farm, known as Mishkikikitagon, which is Ojibwe for the Medicine Garden. This project was started by a coalition of organizations, including the Indian Health Board, the Women's Environmental Institute, White House, Ventura Village, Indigenous Peoples Task Force, and the Native American Community Clinic. And I think you got a handout that has the more information that you can look at. So I'll be brief so Beto can talk.
Ms. Livingston?
Yep.
Anderson, this one right here, right?
Yep.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
So our goal in this project is to create and nurture the culture of local food production. We do this by combining farm production with educational programs and by providing a community space for all to use. Last year, we had over 1,400 visits to the garden. We produced almost 3,000 servings of vegetables for the community. and we hosted over 75 free community events. So we support this bill because we are currently utilizing land that is leased to us on a one-year basis. Having access to zoned agricultural land for 10 years would make us a more reliable resource within the community, and it would also allow us to expand our production into a variety of perennial flowers, fruits, vegetables, herbs, and mushrooms. And with that, I will let Beto talk.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record. Begin, please.
I'm Abel Martinez. I am Ho-Chunk from Black River Falls, Wisconsin.
Welcome.
All right, does it work now? All right.
Yes.
I'm Ho-Chunk from Black River Falls, Wisconsin, and I've been involved with the project for 3 years since the beginning, or going on 3 years. I've helped with the 4-H program in the garden. We had like a group of 20 students that we taught. We've had like the weekly grow your own classes, so people would come from the community and they go here and we teach them like certain things. Like we had classes on compost and like preserving food and stuff. And we would have like kind of almost like every week we had community events. And we support this bill because in the garden, we grow kind of like sacred plants for the Native American people. We grow sage and sweet grass, and we grow the three sister plants, the Oneida corn, Cherokee trail beans, and a cool old squash that was given to us by Winona LaDuc. It's been around for 3,000 years, and if we had like a permanent space to grow, it would be cool because we could keep growing our sacred plants, and they'd be safe in a urban farm area.
So, and is it Mr. Martinez?
Yeah.
Did I get that correct? So is this, and I'm learning here as well, right? It's an education process. So thank you so much for coming in and providing your testimony because it helps out tremendously. I understand this right. This is a way to embrace or to really embrace ethnic heritage and stuff like that and to teach others. Is that correct?
Yeah. Even like, cause some I've met people from like different countries that come to the garden. Like a lady down the street from Jamaica, she comes and we were throwing out something that we thought was weed, like a weed. But then she came and she told us that it was in Jamaica, it grows over the place and they eat it. So she came and she would get it all and then she'd cook it for us. And then she would bring those to the community events. And then another lady down a different street was from Ecuador and she was the one who taught us the how to like husk the corn and stuff. And how to take it off, and when you get the corn off of the cob,
yeah,
by hand she did like 5 pounds of that, and it's pretty cool.
You couldn't keep up with her? That is pretty cool. And Mr. Martinez, did you say you're involved in 4-H?
Yeah.
Can you describe that a little bit? Just number of students, what you learn, your involvement?
Yeah, with the 4-H group, we get students that from, like, because across the street there's a warehouse, and they have, a youth group, and they send some of the kids over, then we get kids from the community who come. And there was me and two other 4-H leaders, but we meet, and there was somebody named Rebecca Fairbanks. She was kind of like the leader, and we would give out, like, what we want to teach the students, and then she would make a lesson about it. And then we would teach the students the lesson, so it was mainly youth-led, but she was there to make sure everything happened. And we taught them about, like, bees and compost and kind of the same things we thought about adults, and we had, like, activities for the kids, and we kind of had, like, a little scavenger hunt, so we'd give them a little stick that had, like, a plant on it, and they would have to go look and see which one they thought it was.
Yeah. So, and Mr. Martinez, do you see a growing interest amongst the youth? Are they... you see more kids or more students that would like to participate?
Yeah, and then it's like, because, down the street is, like, Little Earth, and I live next to the garden, and Little Earth would send, like, a group of kids, and they would kind of just stand around, and then most of them were some of my friends, and when they seen that I would work in the garden, they're like, oh, you think this stuff is cool? It's like, yeah, you're making your own food. You make a lot in a week, and then they were like... So then after that, I noticed when Little Earth would come, more kids would come, and they would start helping out. And I think it's like seeing that other kids like it, more kids will start to do it.
So, Mr. Martinez, you have a bright future ahead of you, without a doubt. Thank you so much for your testimony. What's your future goals? Have you decided that yet?
I kind of want to go into community development because I work with the Native Youth Alliance of Minnesota right now, and we did a health community conversation about, and we based it on the garden too, and it was fun.
Thank you. I think we have some questions. Representative Miller, have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and look at them. And
that's okay.
You and
that's
the right. Microphone all at the same time, so I hope I don't get whiplash from all that. So, Representative Clark, thank you for the work that you're doing in this. And I was going to ask this at the end, but it's very poignant with this young gentleman. Mm-hmm. Do you have or would you consider ways in which we can get urban ag to work with non-urban ag, rural ag? And now the reason why I'm saying that is listening to the gentleman who said if anyone's failed, it's us people who have failed. Mm-hmm. I hear a young man here who is really into agriculture, and we have a lot of work in agriculture out in my area. And so is there any efforts that we can, you know, kind of have some sort of coordination? Because I think that urban ag can learn from rural, and rural can probably also learn from urban. So is there anything that we could do to kind of bridge those two?
Representative Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, you just opened the wonderful door that we've had a little bit of discussion about, which is, yes, there are, and I think Mr. Cheney was talking about the same issue, that some of our youth who are in the city and learning to farm, and by the way, this young man is 16 years old, and so I have to write him an excuse to go back to school. So
you're going
to
get extra credit, buddy. We're all going to write you an excuse. You'll get extra credit. Representative Clark.
People like him and others, yes, I mean, I think there is the opportunity, especially some of the connections with the University of Minnesota. You know, if for example, Beto can go on and get, that's the nickname that we call it, can go on and get some of the education that he wants, he will be able to go probably numerous places, and I hope he will continue his interest in agriculture. He's such an important leader already. I think there might be some more formal ways we could think about it, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. You know, urban-rural alliances are some of the things that 4-H helps bring, some of the things that FFA helps bring. I know we have talked about FFA in the city, and so I think it's a fertile ground to figure out. Some of these folks and some of their relatives are in rural Minnesota, in various parts of the state. So let's work on that. I think it's a great door to try to walk through together.
Yeah. So Miller, follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. I couldn't agree more because, young man, you could, in a couple of years, I can find work for you instantly out in our area that would really, you know, so developing some of those lines of communication are really kind of one of the key first steps in being able to do that, and a little bit of exposure from both cases. Mr. Chair, I've still been asking for a tour of I'll renew my request for a tour of an urban agricultural center. You know, love to see that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Representative Miller. Well, a couple things. I'm not afraid. I'm excited. We're going to be working for Mr. Martinez is what's going to happen. He's not going to come out working for us. We're going to be working for him. This young man's extremely bright. And Representative Clark, you've already extended the offer to where to tour us on some of these. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's an open invite.
That's right. We'll ask our two guests here to be on the help lead the tour that day, and there's others too.
Yeah, Mr. Martinez, would you show us around?
Yeah,
we'll get you out of school.
All right,
all right, buddy. All right. Thank you.
Thank
all right,
you.
Everybody shut off your phones. All right, thank you. Thank you so much. That was the principal calling, just making sure you're here, Mr. Martinez. So thank you so much. Any other testifiers, Representative Clark? Seeing another one coming? So welcome. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, if you would, please, and begin.
How you doing, Chairman Hamilton?
Doing great.
Rico Howard from Project Superman and Fresh Start Farms.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your name again?
Rico Howard from Project Superman and Fresh Start Farms, which is a farm in Mora, Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Howard.
Okay, and I've been working with Karen Clark at WEI. They have hoop houses with aquaponic units and all of that, and a lot of trainings we've done over the last few years. So I'm here wearing three hats today. Citizen lobbyist, a farmer, and community activist. I mean, today it's agriculture, tomorrow it might be over at healthcare. But the interesting thing about these concepts, and I heard you speak of the rural-urban thing earlier, we've created a model where we've seen struggling rural farmers with all of this land, and they're elderly, and they're struggling, and they can't farm the land, and then we're trying to do urban gardening in the community where there's small funding, but 200 kids want jobs, and we can only hire 10 to 12. Yeah. So we developed a model where we started taking the inner city youth out to the rural areas so we could use the rural funding, because current legislation sort of pits urban gardening and rural gardening against each other. So, and we all know government moves real slow. So, you know, we had to sort of ignore some of these things and strategize ways that we could make the system work. So urban gardening economically can't be sustainable without adding other elements as far as training. And being Minnesota, a pioneer state, that's the first in doing everything. I like what we're doing here in the model. I mean, we're going to be the first state to use Section 3 in agriculture. Nobody's thought of that. This is a HUD program designed at low-income workers. So now I could use these HUD tax credits over here in agriculture because it still works, just like I was doing in construction. So it takes people like me that's all over the place. You know, a lot of people don't get my strategy. But I believe that, you know, there's a connection everywhere. You know, right now we're trying to talk St. Paul schools into building organic gardens because they can't buy them from us and afford it. So as a farmer, there's not a lucrative deal to sell to the school board. You know, you have this gap plan. They're going to police your farm. You're going to get below market value for your vegetables. So a farmer could go out of business just trying to supply the school board, the way that the current system is set up. Now, when we get into value-added products, that gives a farmer a chance to become lucrative at his trade. Or if we could talk these schools into producing organic gardens right next to the school, then you can afford them because you're producing them. You're cutting off distribution money that the trucks will be bringing food throughout the summer to these schools. So there's potential growth there. Now, health care is really what it's about, because for some students, lunch, school lunch, if not the only meal of the day, is the best meal of the day if you're low income. So it should be like organic. It should be having that organic garden at a school brings in families. Now the school can produce a cash crop as well as afford to give a bag of organic groceries to a low income family of a student at the school. So there's benefit there. We have ag in the class. We have farm to school initiative. This bill that Karen Clark's passing, cities over 60,000 population have an alternative food source. This is very needed. Being a member of InfraGard, I can see where we could have a problem if we don't have an alternative system and say something was to go wrong with supermarkets or some kind of terrorist attack or whatnot. But we would find ourselves in a dire situation. So being able to do urban garden gives us a chance to teach youth how to feed themselves, how to create an economic market. There's market training because you have to get out here and promote and sell these vegetables to the community. Instead of having an empty lot next door, you have a community garden, community beautification going on because you have an organic garden there instead of an empty lot. And we have edible landscapes that we're trying to bring to parks and recs. So instead of just having hostas and stuff laying around, you know, a kid could slide down a slide and walk over, grab a strawberry or a plum off a tree. That would be more effective in our urban communities. So this bill is bigger than what we might think. You know, there's a lot of good things going on now. The people at my organization, we're like light years ahead of the game. We're doing vertical farming. We're doing wetland farming. We created a system where we could actually filter out the phosphorus out of the rivers by growing vegetables in the wetlands. Now, if we was to do something like this up and down the Mississippi at strategic points, we could change the greenscape of this part of the country. And actually not just, well, Minnesota is great at being a model state and showing the rest of the country what to do. So I love that we're pioneers, and I love that, you know, we look at these things. We would be the first in a lot of different areas. Hazel Park would be the first school in St. Paul to build an organic garden next to the school. So, you know, and we have these job creations that could come out of this. Like I said, with the rural struggling farmers and these inner city kids that just have so much time on their hand, they're getting in trouble. We could house, we could employ 200 of them by going to Mora or going to some of these other rural areas, Albert Lee's and different areas. So I would like to really see this bill pushed.
You know, Mr. Howard, if memory serves me correctly, when you testified at the policy committee too, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, and if memory serves me correct, I was one of those kids where idle hands get in trouble.
Yes.
And so I saw a lot of trouble. Just ask my mother, right? And when I was at, it was actually the Hmong Freedom Festival, and there was an officer there, Officer Benny Williams, and he just happens to live in the same apartment building that I stay in up here. And he said back in the 70s, he was very similar, idle hands get in trouble.
Yes.
And they had a program there, I think it was called the JOY program, Job Opportunity for Youth. And he said, we were able to work in the gardens and stuff like that, and take field trips to the farm, and it kept him out of trouble. And you would, if memory serves me correctly, you talked a little bit about that, given the youth something to do versus getting into trouble, if you will. Was that a correct statement?
Yes, it was. I mean, it worked for me. You know, I was one of those kids with the same problem, and it was programs like Michael Chaney had that I was a part of. But we, you know, tangible programs, not the rhetoric agencies that just say, hey, we're going to do this, but nothing happens. We really need something that the kids really can do. Plants have a way of calming the inner person. You know, I could look at a plant and tell if it needs nitrogen or phosphorus. I really understand plants, but it's the people that baffle me.
It's the people that baffle us.
Yeah, I don't get the people.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers, members? Any other questions? Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Maybe one more witness.
All right, from please.
Rochester.
Come on up. There's another familiar face. You've been here before. You understand the process, but please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Carla Nimlin. I work for the State Council on Black Minnesotans office in Rochester, Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, a member of the committee. I really want to give kudos to Representative Clark for her hard work on this bill, and also to you, Mr. Chair, for the collaboration that have been going on here. I should tell you that I don't know anything about farming, but I have learned a lot, you know, working with you guys on this. Senator Sanjum taught me a lot about urban farming, because as I talked with my local legislators, you know, on the bills that the council was for putting or carrying, you know, I talked about all the bills, and I will always say, urban farming, I don't know anything about it. And Senator Sanjum said, oh, I know about that. You know, it's land usage and zoning and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, great. So you can teach me. And Representative Pearson, I met with him, and he used a whole bunch of different languages that I don't even know what it is.
Well, we don't either. I'm just teasing Representative Pearson. Yeah,
but I think there is a strong support, and a this bill is very empowering for the community to be able to have access to fresh food that otherwise we won't have access to. And as you all know, as Rochester grows with the Destination Medical Community Medical Center, I think this bill is very needed to be able to give the community an option on, you know, the food that we eat and the food that we provide our kids. I know that China One in Rochester have had a community garden for the last 4 to 5 years now. There is a community garden in Byron, Minnesota. I live in Byron. So I always tell people I'm from out of town. So, but there is a community garden in Byron. When I lived in the city of Byron, I could not have garden in my backyard. So I had a sandbox that my kids played in. Well, my kids kind of outgrew the sandbox, and I was like, well, can I plant something there? But I didn't have permission from the city to do that. So now I live in the country, and last year was the very first year that I have my own organic garden. you know, with me and my kids planting and stuff like that, because I'm from Liberia and we do substantial farming. It's not commercial farming. So I think it's kind of like a thing to give you access to fresh food that you can go in the backyard and pick your own food and cook it the same day and, you know, and stuff like that. So we had a really good time, you know, fighting the rabbits for our carrots and things like that. But hey, you know, we have access to fresh food. And so I encourage you members and chair of the committee to really support this bill, because I believe it will empower our communities to have access to fresh food and then live up to the Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Any questions for the testifier? Thank you so much for your testimony again. It's great to see you, as always. Representative Clark.
So maybe we should turn, Mr. Chairman, to the amendments, and you know, hopefully this is a good background for some big changes that have been proposed. And I think you have the First Amendment, Mr. Chairman, the DE4 amendment.
DE4. And members, so with the DE4, of course, we're trying to strike a balance between what is the need, how much dollars are available. Talking with the department, we were talking about doing a pilot project because we want to get this right. And so I'm going to move the DE4 amendment. And so we have the amendment before us. But with that said, visiting with Representative Clark, visiting with the community, we wanted to, I limited it to Minneapolis-St. Paul. And because I wanted to do the pilot project and figure this thing out, well, like I said, there's been a number of folks that said, please don't do that. We can still figure it out, open it up a little more to where others can participate in this as well. So the DE, Representative Clark?
It's the A4 amendment, I believe, to your amendment, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
And if I could just explain that.
If you would.
Yes. So as Chairman Hamilton said, originally the DE4 amendment was basically what he, and actually I want to give some credit and thanks to Santa Cruz and other Mary Hanks, who came and met with us about that bill, and that's what they proposed. The A4 amendment opens it back up to what was in the original bill that says an eligible city is that original definition, which included seven county metropolitan area as defined in the law, plus the statistical areas. And the only way we could really figure out to make it clear for other metro statistical areas was to name them. So it names Duluth, East Grand Forks, Mankato, Moorhead, Rochester, and St. Cloud as other metro areas that are eligible cities to participate in this program. And then the second part of this amendment deals with something that was in Representative Hamilton's DE4 delete everything amendment, which is just clarifying a part that he has in his, which says the city, a city, eligible city would receive a grant, and it's based on the number of acres within the city, and they get an incentive to keep that land in agricultural production, and if they don't, then there's a reduction to the grant that they had received, and actually a penalty if it's removed from agriculture, unless there's a good reason. And so in this amendment, the second part of it talks about the city having to repay three times the amount of the grant they receive if they reduced the acreage and to either to an urban farmer or an organization that's doing urban farming. And what we're trying to make sure here is that it's not just preserving the amount of acres, but the farms that are there. And I think actually we clarify that in a further amendment, Mr. Sullivan, I believe, right?
Right.
Number three makes that clear.
And
so, and I'm a little, I think these two go to, the A4 and the A3 go together, but I believe that by the process we have to first amend the A4 to Representative Hamilton's amendment.
Representative Clark, we'll have Mr. Sullivan weigh in on it, so we take him in the right order here.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, the A4 replaces the A3. The second half of the A4 is really the bulk of the language.
Oh, you put it in there. Okay.
All right. So we have the DE4 in front of us. Representative Clark then moves the A4 to amend the amendment. And members, just to reiterate what Representative Clark had said when we were talking about this, the other thing that we wanted is to deal with the communities, with the city in particular. And in the event we secured these grounds and they would take it out of production, there would be a clawback on those dollars. So they would pay the Department of Ag back those monies and they could be reinvested somewhere else, because we wanted to make sure that they do stay in agriculture. So that was the thought process behind that. And as this being a pilot project, what we've working with the Department of Agriculture is we want to have structured to where if the cities reinvest these dollars back into that ground in some way, shape, or form, maybe it's compost or fencing or whatever the case may be, as it pertains to agriculture, there's going to be additional provisions in there to help them secure those dollars. So it's going to be a competitive piece, if you will. And we want these dollars, once again, get to the farmers, get to the individuals working on this. So that's the thought process. But I cannot stress enough that this is a pilot project, and we're going to continue working on the details around this. So, Representative Lewick, you have a question?
More of a comment, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark. That broadening the fiscal location of these areas is hugely important, because you learn real quick if you spend much time wandering around all of Minnesota that what you can do in Duluth, Minnesota, relative to agriculture, let's put it the other way, what you may be able to do down in Mankato or over in Moorhead or Rochester, you may not be able to do in Duluth. So it is really important, particularly in this pilot project approach, that we go to other parts of the states if that's possible, because when you start looking at the things that grow and how they grow, the environment is hugely important to that. And you know, as a kind of a practitioner, you know, when you watch the frost line move up the state and you plot when you can plant, I mean, that's real, and it would apply to what we're doing here. So to take it out of beyond the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, because that really is a big step. So this is really a very important addition to this, because a pilot project that would work in Duluth may be different than one that would work in Rochester. So the more the better here, really.
Thank you. And Representative Lewick, I'm glad you brought that up. And if you would please take some time, read the A6 amendment right now. And maybe I'll have you offer that one up, and I'll explain it a little bit, because it goes further into the point that you were making, Representative Lewick. And I was visiting with Representative Clark on these as well, and we want to make this better. And so we want people to offer up suggestions and stuff, too. So take a look at the A6 amendment, if you would, please. But Representative Lewick?
Would you want that as an amendment to the amendment?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. So just go ahead and read through it. Familiarize yourself. Chair Anderson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a comment on the A4 amendment and your efforts to have this clawback with the cities. I am concerned about the language on lines 120 and 121. It's pretty vague and pretty broad that the city could say that nearly any purpose would be better than agriculture and not be subject to that clawback period. So is there any way to tighten up that language that a city could use to take that land back out of agriculture production?
Chair Anderson, I like the way you think. I really do. And I think that myself and Representative Clark, I don't want to speak for you, but we're trying to get this right. Mm-hmm. And so if we could work with you and we'll work with Mr. Sullivan and others as well to see if we can't tighten that up. I don't, unless you have some thoughts right here, right now, you'd have my commitment. I believe you'd have Representative Clark's commitment as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, and I want to say these are very fresh amendments, so they do need some feedback, and I got a similar comment from one person in the community, like, could it be more specific? So I would consider it a work in progress, and yes, we do need to maybe clarify that a bit.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Anderson. So anything else on the A4
A4. I should have my glasses on. My A4 amendment. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I'm looking at the cities listed under 1.9, and obviously East Grand Forks is a smaller community that's attached to Grand Forks, a larger, small MSA. It doesn't include North Mankato, and North Mankato is completely a different town than Mankato, but obviously is part of the Mankato MSA. And I don't know if you wanted to do an oral amendment to Mankato-North Mankato to embrace them both, or we can let it go as is. I don't want to confuse it. Most of the interest in this currently, I should mention, in urban farming is in the city of Mankato, but that doesn't mean that my hometown of North Mankato wouldn't also be interested. You're trying to be thorough, and that would be more thorough. So.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
Maybe this is a question for Mr. Sullivan. I think these are, I think we meant to include the metro area of those towns, right? Is that correct?
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, trying to remember our discussion. I think that was a concept originally, but the language here is limited to the cities themselves, so that would need some additional work as well to expand it to the larger metropolitan area, which I know you and I discussed difficulties with that, and that the MSAs that are quite large and sometimes extend into neighboring states, so it's difficult to pin this down, I guess.
And if I could, Representative Johnson, if we could go a little bit further into this and take up the A6 amendment, and then let's discuss it a little further, if we could, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I'm patient with that. I just wanted to point that out. And again, this is progress. I know it's a work in progress as well, and I don't want to confuse it today. Yeah. But just so be on record that North Mankato is also part of the Mankato metropolitan area. So.
Thank you. All right, so any other discussion on Clark's A4 amendment? Any other discussion? All right, we'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So now we have the DE4 amendment as amended. Which should we take up the A6 now? All right. Okay, so let's go ahead and vote on the DE4 as amended. Okay, Representative Clark? So any further questions on the DE4 as amendment? Representative Poppy, I'm sorry.
I do have some questions, so I just don't want to miss out. If you go to the A6 next or whatever, but I just said maybe a variety of questions.
Okay, that's fine.
Should I do that now?
Okay. I'm sorry, he's whispering in my ear.
Yeah, no, it's
here,
okay.
So
I can understand.
Have a variety of questions?
Yes, I do. Well, just, sure. And I know this is a work in progress, and I know that people have poured their heart and soul into it, and they really want to see some movement this legislative session. But I do just have a few things. One is just currently that, there are some blanks here, and I'm just wondering about how many acres right now. If you know how many acres within the city limits and that you're talking about, how many acres you're already talking about, and what kind of money you are looking at.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I'll leave the answer about how much money we're talking about to the chairman, but the question of acres is something that we're trying to explore so that it means that so that people can cities can get a meaningful grant. And right now, I've been asked a few cities to try to give us some examples of how many acres they have. Even my own city, we don't know. So this is a new concept, as I said, just before the break it was crafted. And so we have to do a little bit more research on those numbers. And I'm interested in what any of you might know about your communities, the number of acres. It's a difficult number to actually get our hands around. So the answer to your question is we're still kind of surveying that.
And thank you, Representative Clark. And thank you, Representative Clark. And Representative Poppy, we did have this conversation with the department, and that's going to be part of the process. The department's going to be surveying these communities as well. We have contacts, and Mr. Cruz is shaking his head yes up there in order to help us answer a few more of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe it might be simpler, but maybe not, to instead of using current numbers of acres and trying to do something, maybe to just talk about, I mean, obviously if you want to increase the number of acres, mm-hmm. is there a percentage of increasing, or is there a, I don't know, but I know you're trying to get to an amount and try to be as fair as possible, so I'm not trying to get away from that, but just wondering about that, since it may be technically difficult to actually get to that number, and so maybe there's a different way to approach that. And then on line 1.16, I am a bit concerned about a city may use the grant for any purpose, just that phrase, because that to me is pretty open-ended, and cities could take some money and make it seem as though they're doing something for urban agriculture, but really doing something for zoning in another part of the city or something. So I think maybe some specificity needs to be there, or some other way of describing what that needs to be. Just a concern about that.
Like a response on that one?
Sure.
All right. So Representative Clark and I, we had that conversation as well, and we're completely open. I don't want to speak for Representative Clark. And our thought process was that if the cities are doing this, our first thought was if they increase the acreage, they'd be eligible. Well, then we were concerned that if we base it on that, they could go ahead and shut some farms down and then reapply, and so that could be messy. So we said, all right, it's just we'll survey the number of land that's out there, and it's not private gardens. So we're not going to go around in individuals' backyards, private gardens. These are community-based. And then what we were saying is in order to encourage the city, we'll have, when they're applying for these grants, you know, we'll start where you can use these dollars how you see fit. But there's going to be a series of additional criteria in there for bonus points, if you will, in order to qualify for this if they're reinvesting it into that ground. Does that make sense? Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can expand. I know
Clark.
One of your ideas, and I know that you and Mr. Cruz were talking about that very issue, that the department will design the request for proposals, and within it they're going to give points for what the cities say they will be using the money for. And so that will either cause them to rank higher or lower in terms of getting a grant. It's going to be very competitive, but there's a limited amount of dollars. I don't know, maybe we could ask Mr. Cruz to just expand on that if he wants to, but we could. I think what might be missing is some language that tells everyone that the department will be designing a request for proposals that promotes urban agriculture, supports it, and maybe that just needs to be some language that's added.
Representative, Mr. Cruz, state your name for the record, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The understanding that I had at our conversation along with Mary Hanks and Chair and Representative Clark was that what the bill seeks to do is induce cities to rezone land that is currently not zoned for agriculture to be allowed for agriculture. So that's the primary goal, is to get more acres through zoning. Now, by allowing the funds to be used for any purpose, that is the incentive, I suppose you'd say, for the rezoning. So you're getting what you want from the city. At least I believe that's what the authors would say. You're getting what you want from this legislation. The moment that the city rezones to acquire the funds, then you've gotten that. However, in a perfect world, you'd have them using those funds to either improve or induce or somehow further support urban agriculture, in which case you would receive either extra funds or more than likely extra points in the evaluation in your RFP if you were going to use those funds that way. However, there are cities that have areas of need that they have very, very difficult time acquiring funds for. Just for example, let's say, you know, street cleanup or something like that, or potholes. Okay, so you wouldn't want to be saying, well, we're funding potholes. However, at the same time, what the legislation, as we understand it, seeks to do is to get them to rezone land for agriculture. Now, if they were using those funds, and if they were chosen through the RFP process, if they were using those funds for the improvement of that land for urban agriculture after rezoning it, that would be something that they would score higher on. However, it wouldn't be that you couldn't get it. It wouldn't be that you wouldn't qualify at all if you're using it for something else, because you've already done as the city what the legislation seeks, which is a rezoning for agricultural land. So that was my understanding.
Well, or Mr. Cruz, we're talking about allowable use,
yeah. Right?
And so it's not necessarily rezoning per se, but it's allowable use right. for agriculture. Yeah, allowable use. So.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This just convinces me that we need to actually spell out a little more clearly
okay.
What the department would be rewarding. And so I think that was a good stimulus to take us in that direction. And that, you know, they're going to be designing the RFP, but I do think we might need to give them a little guidance on that, because I understand I'm not interested in seeing this used for potholes. Personally, I'm very interested in seeing it used for the purpose that we are intending here.
All right. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. Couple of other things. One is in rural agriculture, we have people who will complain about their neighbors and the smell or the use of pesticides or whatever it might be. I mean, there are things that happen, and I'm just wondering how the permits, licenses, ordinances, zoning, you know, I know all of these are bits and pieces of this, but I'm wondering how do you help to ensure that good neighbors that are doing urban ag are not going to be seen as bad neighbors just because they're doing urban ag. I don't know how to really describe that, but I'm a bit, and I don't know that you can legislate how people act or react. Certainly you can't do that, but maybe there's something about a partnership or something with the cities. I'm not sure. I think there is maybe a sense of there needs more specificity, but maybe there needs to be more broadness as well in this legislation, and that's what I know has been the difficulty for the last year and a half, to try to come up with what this is going to be. But I know you want to get this right, and if we don't get it right, you just are setting up for a really bad experience and bad publicity around this area. I don't have solutions. I apologize. I don't. I'm just trying to think of how. But that was again one area that I'm just. How do we make sure that we can kind of do what we can, that we're promoting good urban agriculture and good neighbors, and that we're not creating a hostile situation between people who now might not know that they were going to live next to something that. A little chicken farm in the city or something. So that was another question. And then one of the testifiers had mentioned something about zoning ag land for 10 years or having that, and I don't read anything like that in this bill, so I'm just wanting to make sure that just that I'm clear that there isn't something in here that's saying that you're doing something for a period of time. Is that correct?
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chairman, that was in the original bill, and I think, you know, again, these amendments came just very fresh, and people hadn't had a chance to totally review them, I guess. So the 10-year line is not in there anymore. What is in there instead that the chairman came up with is an incentive to continue the land and a clawback if it's not continued. So there's no time limit that's in there. And there is a provision, if you look online, 1.18 of the A4 amendment. There's a provision there that there's no penalty if there's something that's created called a public nuisance, and I think we might think about how if that comes up. I think your question was more about not the clawback part of that, but just is it something that might happen? I'm going to just share one thing with you. I know that what I have seen so far in urban farming is urban farmers are great neighbors to the communities that they're in. And one of the reasons is pretty often the urban farming that I've seen, whether it's very tiny or actually fairly expansive, involves the community. And the people around are able to participate if they want to. They are often given some of the the crop that grows their food. I haven't really run across the issue that you're talking about. I do know that in terms of chickens, there are ordinances already in our city that you have to get permission from all the farmers around you that you can have chickens. That, you know, there's some very strict regulations on that, and it's partly because of the issue that you're raising. You know, do people feel like it would be a problem? So there may be some things we could do to tighten up a little bit around that area, but I guess let's talk about it. I'm not too worried about there being big problems with the growing of urban farms, but maybe if you have some language that you'd like to suggest that might make it clearer, you know, we could talk about that. And
this is what the committee process is for. I would like to add, though, this does not circumvent any of the national, state, local ordinances in any way, shape, or form. So, Mr. Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You bring up a good point, Representative Hoppe, and I think that's where the wisdom is in this legislation. Even though this is not even though this is not a department bill, this is something that is very near and dear to the commissioner's heart, and he's talked with both the chair and Representative Clark about that. So what I would say is I think there's real wisdom, and it was Chair Hamilton that had the idea of doing this as a pilot, because we will have some of those growing pains. You know, we would never promise anybody in any new program that there won't be mistakes, there won't be outliers, there won't be might be a neighbor issue here or there. But that's really where the wisdom is in a pilot program, where we get to come back to the legislature and say, here's how we use the funds, here's who qualified, here are areas where, you know, we thought it worked really, really well, and it was this type of agriculture, or this is an area where it didn't work so well, and that was, and we would make these recommendations, or we think these are the reasons for it. So, from our perspective, when we're doing something brand new like this, and it is as Representative Clark has said, a kind of a case of first impression for the department to get into urban farming in this particular type of way, we like pilots, because it gives us a chance to test ideas and then to come back to you all and say, did we meet what you had instructed us to do? Did we get it right? What would you like to see more of? What would you like to see less of? And it keeps that conversation going so that there is a successful program if, in fact, it's broadened.
Yeah, thank you. And Representative Clark, I heard from Chair Anderson some questions around the clawback, or what could trigger a clawback or get him out of that. I think we should address that. And then also from Representative Poppy about lines 1.16 on how those dollars can be allocated. And that was my thought initially, sitting in your office. That was what I suggested. But I think if we would, this will be held over for possible inclusion. And so those are two areas that I have in my notes as far as to address this as well. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that you're crafting an omnibus bill and trying to come up with all sorts of things, but I'm just wondering, just for future thought on that, doing that maybe just taking lines 1.5 to 1.6 and putting a period after program, if the commissioner shall establish and administer an urban ag development pilot program, period, and maybe having the details not be in a bill, but having the details be within the department, and they could, you know, maybe you'd want to add something about how they'd need to convene stakeholders and they'd need to have a timeline when they're going to actually bring this forward or whatever. But, you know, maybe because I know you're under the gun a little bit on time, to try to put too much specificity in may not be the right approach. Maybe instead it's just kind of a broad that they're going to do that. They have a deadline to get something in place by February 1, 2016, and then it really does start next year or something. I'm just throwing out an idea to consider.
Thank you. Representative Clark or Mr. Cruz, any comments? Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I really enjoy this discussion. I do think we're a little bit challenged within the expertise within the room that sits on this committee. To Representative Poppy's point, you know, the department may be able to do a little more research. I personally have taken a tour of a location called the Plant down in Chicago. And what's intrigued me about some of the discussions we're having, we talk about an increase in acreage, and the plant is actually in an old factory within the factory. And they're growing things year-round. And so we're kind of taking our expertise of agriculture, traditional agriculture, and trying to apply it to an urban environment and saying, you know, the growth in acreage is all we can measure. Well, that's not necessarily the public policy growth of success for this type of program. What we want is, what do we want? Do we want more jobs? Do we want more food production? Do we want, someone talked about beautification of neighborhoods, you know, then maybe you do want more gardens and contemplating that and access. And so I think I kind of echo Representative Poppy's, but, you know, in the plant, they're growing mushrooms year-round in controlled environments where they've got the ability to control the humidity, and it's pasteurized mushrooms that they're growing within this facility, and they're doing aquaponics, growing fish for production, for consumption, as well as plants that are filtering that water. So the passion of, and I didn't get the gentleman's name, you know, talking about redoing the Mississippi River and getting some of the phosphates out of the water. I mean, all these things are things we should be contemplating, but some of us are just a bunch of farmers, and we're not used to doing this within the city streets and the nooks and crannies that are available, and the opportunities that are truly available in these communities that we talked about. So I guess in many ways, I think some broader direction on what our public policy outcomes would be within this bill might be helpful. You know, is it about food production? Is it about jobs? Is it about all those things? And really then just directing the department to try to, you know, make those grant applications work within those parameters and accomplishing those goals. Because if we start defining so many acres per year and clawing back because someone ended up finding the ability to put an agricultural grant in another area that has nothing to do, it's vertical agriculture, so you're not talking about acreage. I have a giant barn I'd like to put an aquaponics system in. That's why I'm researching this. So I look at it and say, I'm not taking any acreage, so I don't get a grant. Mm-hmm. I don't meet the specificity that we're putting in this bill potentially.
All right, thank you. Any other comments? I would like to, have you had a chance to look at the A6 amendment? Representative Lewick, what we're going to do, friends, and thank you so much for the thoughtful debate, because you're right, Representative Poppy, we want to get this right. There's no question about it. Let's go ahead, if we could, please, to get the bill as amended. We're going to have to vote on the DE4 amendment as amended so that we can get that before us, and then we'll speak to the A6 amendment. And believe me, we're taking into consideration what has been said here. So any further discussion on the DE4 as amended? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Thank you. So now we have the I lost the A6 amendment. The A6 amendment. And Representative Lewick, you brought up a good part about eligibility and stuff as well. And taking that into consideration, what we're trying to craft here, or what we did, not trying, what we did craft here, is that this would expand it a little more based on the percentage of the population who are minorities, including Native American Indians and Hispanics, and living in below 200% of the poverty threshold determined by the United States Census Bureau. And that goes to your point, Representative Lewick, I believe. Are you okay with that? Would you like to speak to that or move that amendment?
Yes, if I would move that A6 amendment. Right. That's an order, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of suggestions.
Thank you.
And they would be on, and maybe this is wordsmithing, but on line 1.5, if we just worded the word A between is and minority, it just seems to read better. And then a little further along there, I'm wondering if it shouldn't read including but not limited to Native American Indians and Hispanics, because there's, when we start talking about minorities, my experience is that's a huge number of groups out there, and as soon as we name one or two, we're in danger of not naming enough. Maybe we shouldn't name any, I guess. Yeah. So I just bring those up more of a from a syntax and readability thing. And I guess the other thing is, it strikes me we would need to also understand that there are places in Minnesota, when you talk about small cities or communities, where Hispanics, Native Americans, or other minorities may very well be the majority. So we just got to make sure that we don't, how we say that, outfox ourselves here on how we deal with that. And you know, this discussion about what works in urban environments, it just takes me back to a city called Sasebo, Japan, where I lived in the community, and I was the only one that, because I didn't have time, I was gone most of the time, that didn't farm my backyard. Nobody had backyards in that world. Literally every flat spot in that part of the world is dedicated to either living on it or agriculture. You were limited to being able to have one car, and you had to have your own parking place there. That's how space-sensitive they were, and they parked cars in these buildings that were 10 stories high. They just parked them on top of each other. So the comments that Representative Pearson made and Representative Poppy made about, we just got to make sure we don't try to outthink this, maybe. But getting back to the amendment, yeah, there's as some of the testifiers brought up here, there's just a huge variation in the way different cultures deal with food production, and so this would really open that door up, and it would open it up to some more areas that we tried to name, some kind of big or medium-sized cities in addition to the metro area. So I would just be very careful about how we, I'm not sure we have the precise language here on how we define minorities. So with that, I've been looking at this, and well, since before we got here. So that's the motion, and certainly be open to, if we need to make some minor syntax adjustments to how we define those minorities. I guess I just want to make sure we don't leave anybody out or come upon a circumstance where we've got the majority of people would use, well, wait a minute, that population is a minority in one sense, but in the city it may be the majority, and yeah, we don't want to goof ourselves up there. So I that's my thoughts on it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Lewick. And I said non-white, but I don't know if that's politically correct, so trying to be sensitive. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, actually, Mr. Sullivan and I worked on this quite a bit. What we're using is official language of the census, and maybe we need to say that again. And the reason that we had a minority is one of the words that's an official language in the census. Non-white is not. Native American Indians and Hispanics are not included unless you put them in. So everybody is included. Minority is all-inclusive, except you have to add those two categories or they are left out. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of tweaking, but that's the reason I wanted you to know, that's the reason for it. We were looking at the official documents or the official, what we could find online about how we meet this suggestion. I just want to say that Chairman brought this forward. I was very pleased. I think it's a wonderful amendment. It does expand it, you know, to other parts of Minnesota that, as you were talking about earlier, would not otherwise not be included.
So, Representative Lewick, you okay moving that amendment and going ahead and voting on it?
Absolutely. In fact, you've solved the question I had about how we define that, taking it to a census, which is something, you know, everybody, it's a whole bunch of documentation. We do that every 10 years nationally, and I think we do it every so often statewide, too.
All right.
Thank you. So, yes, absolutely. That does answer that question that I had about are we properly defining that? That makes sense. If Native Americans and Hispanics aren't included in there, then we need to make sure we address that. So thank you.
Thank you so much. So we'll go ahead and vote on the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. So now we have the DE4. We've adopted DE4, and it's so back to the bill. Representative Clark, we have
2 minutes. This will be held over for possible inclusion. Any final words?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you, and I want to thank all the committee members. We certainly listen to the concerns that you have, and I want to thank the people who came from the community. This really did come out of a lot of community interest and a lot of community experience. So I would just like to say, Mr. Chairman, to you, I would like to make the commitment and ask that we sit down again and see about incorporating some of the concerns and come back again before. I know we have a time. I'm not sure when your omnibus bill is going to be before us, but I would like to say we'll have it done by then, and we'll have a chance to run it out to the community again in various ways and to certainly to community members. That would be my commitment.
Thank you, Representative Clark. So, House file, what's the official motion? 153, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus, Agriculture Omnibus Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, any announcements? Our next meeting is going to be Friday, April 10th. It'll be about, what did you say? About 11:30, all right, or the college chair. Yes, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just see that Ways and Means has just announced that they're meeting from 11 to 1 on Friday. So I don't know if that changes when you would meet or not. But
stay tuned. How about that? Mr. Knisley will send out an email, give everybody an update, all right? We'll get it posted. Stay tuned. Thank you. We are adjourned.